In this episode of the Little Red Barn podcast, a couple of things we're going to be hitting on here. We've got corrections. I will call them correction and salutations in the future, but today we only have
Not because of me either.
No corrections.
The non-farm guy.
No corrections from Coyote today, but yep. So we have corrections. We're going to be talking a little carbon today. Carbon farming. I'm going to talk about an article that was forwarded to me by one of the farmers that I deal with. Going to go through our weekly weather and market chat here because everybody wants to know about weather and markets. So we'll talk about that a bit. And a new segment this week, the one we're going to try and continue. We're going to entitle this, What Did You Miss at the Coffee Shop? So Ryan Martin here, your co-host of the Little Red Barn podcast. Across from me, of course, my good friend and buddy here, Chris, Coyote Chris Underwood. So
Farmer Chris.
You know, farmers, most of the time during the week, at least a couple of days, go out at 6 a.m., 5:30, some of them 7, but there's a coffee shop that they will congregate in or around in their area.
Right.
And they just chew the fat. You know, just talk about stuff. So something.
Every town has one.
Every town has one. And we're going to be talking about some of the things that maybe you missed if you didn't go out this week. So, but we have to lead off this Little Red Barn podcast. Unfortunately, I'm a guy that likes to be right. A lot.
Well, I'm aware. I think everybody's like that.
Yeah,
though.
But
everybody wants to be right.
I'm probably more so than others.
Right.
So, which means I chose poor professions in my life to be in. But anyway, so we have to start off with a correction. And as we kind of mentioned at the start, Coyote, the guy who is supposedly knows nothing about agriculture.
That is 100%
valid. But he's not responsible for this correction.
When you said we had corrections, I was like, oh, no, what did I say?
Yeah, no, you said everything right. But it was me. You recall last week we were talking about just giving an overview. We had some corn ears, and you were educated on what's going on with corn. But we were talking about where Indiana ranks nationwide in production.
Yes, I remember that conversation.
Yeah, well, I gave the soybean stats for the corn. In corn production, so I said last week we were ranked number 4. We are ranked number 5. We are 4 in soybean production. I got my head a little bit askew. And
I'm kind of surprised by that. We are 5.
Yes.
Like that low.
The ones,
it's very surprising to
the
me.
The ones that are above us are Illinois, Iowa. Iowa's 1, Illinois 2. And then you've got Nebraska. A lot of corn in Nebraska.
Oh.
Minnesota.
Well, they are the Corn Huskers.
Corn Huskers, correct. Minnesota number 4 and Indiana number 5.
See, Minnesota, that just blows my mind. I never in a million years would have guessed Minnesota in the top 5, let alone ahead of Indiana.
Well, there's a lot of landmass up there. And, you know, basically, you know, Iowa likes to claim Minnesota, or at least the southern third of Minnesota, as Iowa 2.
Well, I wonder if their corn grows better because they're very much known in Minnesota for their purple rain.
And there you have it. The first pop culture reference. First pop culture reference of this podcast. Folks, there'll be many more.
Yes.
Are you going to sing it for us a little
bit? No, but the great one is from the state of Minnesota.
Exactly
That's what that state's known for.
Exactly. So Prince. Indiana number 5, 1 billion bushels of corn. So still, even at number 5, no slouch in the amount of corn production. But number 4 on soybeans, so we're looking pretty good here on soybeans. Apologize for those... for the need for the corrections, we'll try and do better next time. But moving forward, so, hey, what'd you do this past week, Chris?
Worked.
But inside or outside?
Oh, it was outside.
Outside.
Oh, yes.
And you loved it, right?
Well, every second. Yesterday, I mowed the yard at 5:30 at the hottest time of the day.
Yeah.
The heat index at 5:30 was 109, and I thought, what a great time to... mowed. So I went out and I mowed the yard, and then I walked down and I mowed around the pier a little bit, and then I fell off said pier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and stayed there for a while.
51 minutes I floated to be exact. I remember sending a text to my stepmother, and I got out and read her reply 51 minutes after I sent it. That's how long I floated. I felt no need to get out of the water at that point.
Yeah. And, you know, so this past week, what we're kind of hitting at here, it's been a little warm.
It's been glorious.
Been a little hot.
Not for farming, but for people who are half Southern that love it.
Yeah. So, and we want to talk just about the weather a little bit here because, you know, honestly, in Northern Indiana, where we're coming to you from here, actually, incidentally, within the new confines of the Little Red Barn studio, still under construction.
It is, but we have some 2x4s. Yep. We got the beams look good.
Yep.
So there's no air conditioning. Very thankful that it's not 109 degrees right now.
Yeah, if it was, we wouldn't be here. But but again, so we were not too bad here in the northern part of the state. The temperatures missed the projected or what they could have been for actual air temperatures. They missed by about 4 to 5 degrees each day last week. Our neighbors in the south, southern, central Indiana, and then to the west, Illinois, Iowa, so on and so forth, had some of those upper 90s, triple-digit temperatures. And Chris, as I talked with some guys farther west, you know, in Kansas, you could almost walk out on Tuesday when it was 106. You could walk out and maybe watch a couple of soybean fields die. Not like anybody wanted to do that, but you could actually just see as the heat built, you could see those beans wilt
and
go into protective mode, you know, trying to protect the photosynthesis. So this week is going to be interesting as we go forward into the last week of August to see what the crop condition scores do here across not just Indiana, but the U.S. in general.
Well, I think the good thing is we had those hot days, but it was, what, three hot days for the most part? Mm-hmm. I mean, we were probably around where we normally are other than that. Right. But we had the three hot days, but the weekend cooled down quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So we didn't get that 8, 9, 10 days in a row heat dome over us, keeping it, you know, around 100 or 105. At least it was limited time before we had that cool down Saturday and Sunday.
Well, and I think that's where it's going to be interesting to see what the crop progress numbers say, because clearly folks think there was some damage or it wasn't good to crops. But I'm going to argue, I mean, you talked about the heat indices. When you mowed your yard, it was 109. Well, what makes the heat index? It's not just the temperature. It is the
humidity.
Yeah. All right. So
there was a lot of it.
There was you could cut the air with a knife, proverbially, but that's the thing. You go out, and in crop terms, we weren't in an oven. We were in a greenhouse. That's the way I'm looking at this from the past week. I think the crops, at least here in Indiana and partially in Illinois, where we didn't have the driest air, we had a lot of humidity. We were talking heat indices that nobody liked. But I think that basically put these crops in a greenhouse. And I'm going to argue there probably shouldn't be a whole lot of damage and anything done to yields at this point. The problem could be if it doesn't rain for the next 3 weeks.
So the humidity was probably the life savior to be, you know.
Yeah, we didn't like it, but the plants probably liked it quite a bit. I actually saw another stat that somebody was trying to actually, and you know, on social media, you got to take it worth a grain of salt, but it was interesting. I think one of the meteorologists locally put out a little ditty that said, it's the corn's fault. Because the corn was sweating.
Yes.
Because it was so hot. And he's talking evapotranspiration. But, okay, that's ridiculous. The corn is not the reason why it was so humid this past week.
But it sounded good because it's coming from a meteorologist.
Right. And so he would know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And thanks for playing. But you get the idea. So the crop here, I think, is in okay shape coming out of, as you said, only 3 days. Only 3 days of really bad heat and good humidity. So the question then is, what do the markets do? And the other thing I think we're going to bring up here, the markets seem to become very, very aware of the potential for a large crop, both on beans and corn, not necessarily because of what's trading on the futures, but everybody in this area this past week decided they were going to pay less for soybeans and, in some cases, corn. The basis levels in this area dropped. So, for example, one plant or one elevator moved from 55 under for new crop beans to 60 under, 60 cents under. And there were plenty of others that moved prices down as well. So that only happens, Chris, if there's an expectation of we feel pretty safe, pretty confident that there's a big crop that's going to come no matter what.
Right.
So question then becomes, which would you rather sell? Would you rather, you know, that game, would you rather? Would you rather sell $13 soybeans, $13.50 soybeans, or $4.50 corn?
You're asking me this
question. I'm asking you on the spot.
$4.50 corn.
You would rather sell $4.50 corn. You, sir, are in a minority. From what we're hearing right now, from what we're hearing, sounds like across the countryside, potentially a lot more beans moving. Now, there's plenty of time for this to change.
Is it early for beans, though?
Well, there's nothing ready now, but I'm talking when we go to harvest. When we harvest. What are people going to hold, corn or beans? The industry is starting to talk about maybe more beans moving at harvest just because folks would rather sell corn at $13.50 than beans at $4.50. I'm hearing that 1350 beans make money, and 450 corn, not so much. Depending
so I
on
made
who you
the
are.
Wrong choice.
You made the wrong choice.
Well, it's a good thing my corn died then. So.
All 23 plants.
All 23.
23. Nothing. They didn't come back? They didn't even try and recover?
No, I've got some that are kind of starting popping up new, but I mean, it's too late.
Yeah.
It's too late.
Did you see my corn out here?
I did not pay attention
to it
when I
pulled it. It's about 14 feet tall now.
When will you harvest that? Is that feed corn?
No, this is popcorn. It's in my garden. Yeah, okay. We don't have anything in the field right
popcorn.
Now.
Popcorn.
Popcorn.
Okay, so we talked about sweet corn and field corn.
Yeah.
What signifies the difference of it being popcorn?
It pops.
But not all popcorn does that?
No, not all popcorn does
really?
That. Really? Yeah, no.
See, I did not know this. Yeah. I thought all corn at some point you could pop it.
Yeah, no, the popcorn kernels are smaller. They have more starch content.
And that's not good.
Well, that's what makes them pop. You put the heat in there and it pops. So no, it's popcorn in the garden, pet little project here in the garden.
I'm looking forward to trying that then.
Yeah, no.
I've never had homegrown popcorn before.
Oh, it pops up fantastic.
Never, ever had. Does it come out buttered?
It does not come out buttered.
It's not buttered flavor.
But we grow multicolored. So we've got some blue and white out there and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Blue popcorn. I'm intrigued.
You know what color does it pop?
Blue?
No, it pops white.
Oh. So it turns blue when you...
Yeah, it's the kernels. So the kernels are actually multicolored. It's like Indian corn. You can pop Indian
Very
corn.
Very cool. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I've never had homegrown popcorn before.
Yeah.
It's always been out from the grocery store.
So just be aware, as you're listening here this week, if you have not seen basis changes in your area yet, they're probably coming. Because, again, the market seems very keen on a big crop and also maybe some problems with exports. Because, you know, it's been a while since we have had a chunk of rain here. Storms this past week in Ohio, but not a lot of rain here. And we're also starting to hear up and down the Mississippi River corridor, maybe we've got some draft restrictions now. Maybe some lower waters that we have to worry about.
Well, we've got, with this week, we have cooler temps this week.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe not conducive for... the jet stream.
Well, it's all
because it's all
about
the
jet stream. Right.
Yeah. Conducive with the jet stream to bring us rain during that time.
Well, we're in a drier pattern. We just are. We'll see whether
but it's August. We should be used to this. It is August.
Yeah, well, and nobody wants rain on Labor Day, right? Because that's the last hurrah of summer.
Well, I don't want you to take that to negative town, but that's the mindset of some people, but not all.
Not all. Correct.
Not all.
Yeah. And I've heard from a lot of folks this week, and I'm sure that a lot of you listening are in this camp. One more rain. Just give me one more rain to finish out this.
Really? That, like a good solid like full day of rain would, that was all, that's all you would need.
Or, you know, even not have to be all day. An inch. Give me an inch of rain. 3/4 to an inch and I'll be perfect. So there's a lot of that out there. Problem is, I just don't think we get it. So we'll see.
There's not a lot of rain in the forecast for this week.
No, there's not. None. It's going to be dry beginning to end, even though it's cooler, dry beginning to end. So if you have anything and you want to kind of pass it along again on our social media, something that you're hearing, we will continue to take a look at those. We'll pivot here just a little bit. I spent the morning visiting with a farmer in the area here who was a part of one of the local carbon pilot programs. And another guy this week sent me an article that was in the Top Producer magazine. This is something that's published through agweb.com. So, and it's entitled, Time to Take the Field. And it says, carbon intensity is going to be a team sport. When I say the term carbon intensity, Chris, what the heck are we talking about?
Like, I have absolutely no idea. Mm-hmm. I am completely, you sent me an article on this the other day. I was like, I don't want to read it because I don't really want to know until you break it down for me.
Okay. Well, so... You know, we're generally, up to this point, we've been talking about growing corn, beans, wheats. You can grow whatever. You stick it in the ground, you grow it, you harvest it, bada bing, bada boom, you're done, you sell the product, and you're on your way, right? We're getting a lot more, I don't want to call them regulations, but more initiatives here to try and get more folks to be, well, the administrations, going back several, looking to protect the atmosphere a little bit more. I mean, we don't want to wade into the political side of this. No one wants that. But the initiatives are there, whether you call it green farming, carbon farming, whatever. But the idea has been around since, well, a long time, back when I was in college, the folks at Purdue were talking about carbon sequestration. And sequestration is what it sounds like. You're locking it up somewhere. You're sequestering it somewhere. And it really hasn't gained a lot of talk until recently when we've talked about this climate smart agriculture and things like that. And so the idea is that carbon farming is a way that you're going to be using different practices to try and lock more carbon in the soil profile rather than releasing it because, you know, CO2 is bad.
Right.
I'm using
protecting the environment.
Yes, I'm using the bunny ears here right. because again, don't come to me, guys. Don't come to me and tell me why it's not. I'm the messenger here. But this article was interesting because one of the things that's fueling some of this carbon intensity is there is a new act, let's just say it, because part of the Inflation Reduction Act, it opened a 3-year window for farmers to be compensated for agronomic practices in a new way. You'll probably hear more about this, and I'm sure we'll talk more about it on this podcast as time rolls on. It won't be next week. It won't be the week after because, honestly, I don't want to give that much time to carbon like this. But it's called Section 45Z, 45Z tax credit. It provides biofuel producers, so think of your ethanol plants, think of your biodiesel plants, think of the SAF, sustainable aviation fuel. All of those places have an incentive now to produce low-emission fuels, all right? And this is setting up a business model, according to, again, top producer, setting up a business model where farmers can sell grain and attach the carbon data that goes along with it. So let's go back to your example of your 23 corn plants.
Yes.
If they did not die.
Correct.
All right. And you wanted to take the grain, the total of a quarter of a bushel, from your 23 corn plants, and you wanted to sell it. Now there is a business model that seems to be gaining a little bit of speed where you can sell that grain, but you can also attach all of this data with what you did to sequester the carbon.
Interesting.
Along with it. And maybe get your value of your crop boosted one way or another. Sounds interesting, right?
It does. I'm kind of intrigued by it.
So if we dig a little further, the article goes on to say, you know, the grain is going to be assessed with a carbon intensity score, CI score. That's determined by the Department of Energy. But as I've dug some digging into this, carbon intensity score basically means how much carbon did you use, i.e. fuels and whatnot,
right,
to put the crop in the ground. What did that crop use as it grew? What did you put on it to make it grow? Nitrogen, phosphorus, and the rest.
So you're really analyzing the growth process of the crop.
You remember the movie Moneyball?
Yes.
Years ago?
The numbers game.
The numbers game.
Analytics.
That's what this seems to me like it's turning into. It's Moneyball for agriculture. So you kind of tweak the numbers and figure out who's doing the best or actually not even ranking them. I don't think the market cares whether you're doing it better than me or neighbor Joe is doing it better than Steve. I think it's more about just analyzing those numbers and saying, all right, your crop has a score of this. This is what it was worth. And in the money ball, it's like, you know, hey, this guy gets on base. He may suck at playing catcher, but he gets on base, so we're going to move him to first base so he can play in the air. And that's what this is kind of about, too, figuring out what that point score is, where it goes against the national average, and then trying to figure out whether that is worth more or less, honestly, for your crop when you go to sell it to one of these places, whether it's a biodiesel plant, ethanol plant, so on and so forth.
Well, I mean, it could be successful, but I mean, if you want to compare it in the baseball mindset,
mm-hmm, let's do it.
You could have a lot of success with it and you could win, mm-hmm, or it could completely backfire and your analytics, mm-hmm, don't work for, let's say, the area that you live in,
right,
compared to another baseball team. It may not work for you.
Well, then
it may work for Kansas City, mm-hmm, but it may not work for Cleveland per se.
Well, and I think that they're trying to, as I read in here a little bit, the score is determined by the Department of Energy's parameters. And as I read deeper, each area will be measured against its own regional overall score. So you're not going to be comparing Indiana, Fort Wayne, Indiana soybean production,
right,
to Northeastern Kansas. So they're going to mitigate that a little bit. But to go on with your baseball analogy a little bit more, what made Moneyball work? You know, in the movie, part of the way that it worked is they got a guy that couldn't catch anymore. They decided to move him to first base. He's no good at playing first base, but he learned, but he was willing to try.
Correct.
What if the CI score, in order to get it to a level that you want to get it, requires you to do something that you don't want to do?
Well, I think that there's a comfort level that comes into play.
Right. And I think that there's and that's going to be the biggest thing that either makes or breaks this, whether folks are comfortable doing it or not, and even have the ability to. Because what, you know, again, let's play the what if game. What if getting this CI score from one level to the next level lower requires me to go out and buy a $150,000 piece of equipment?
Then is it worth the spending?
Bingo.
Is it worth the spending to go in that route?
Bingo. Yeah, so some of the things that they're looking at here is they're looking at yield. Okay, so one of the biggest hit things that will make or break your CI score is whether you are producing at a good level compared to your peers or your county or not anyway. Fuel usage or energy usage. Fertilizer, herbicide, and insecticide. And I don't think that this is more on what you're spraying, but the amount of times that you have to spray. For example, a lot of times we spray soybeans at least twice. So how many passes do you have to do? Tillage and cover crop. Those are the biggies. If somebody wants to lower their CI score or take a look at their CI score right now, if you no-till and cover crop, you're immediately a couple of lengths ahead of somebody that does not. It's just the way it is. Whether you like it or not, it's just the way it is. And the last thing that they're tracking here, your favorite and mine, manure.
Ah, Everybody loves a little manure.
How much crap did you spread on your field?
About the same amount that's on this podcast.
Which varies, but is high. It's a high level sometimes. What's interesting here is, because remember, when we talked about this, there's a three-year window. So questions abound twofold, and we're going to talk about this a little bit in the headlines here as we kind of wrap up the podcast. Does that three-year window get extended? Remember, this was part of the Inflation Reduction Act. Again,
right.
I don't
care.
Is that
enough time to be able to get the numbers you want?
Right. And if it is or is not, do we have it continue forward? You know, renew it, I guess is what I'm looking at, or do they scrap it? And secondly, what happens if politics change? What happens if you have a administration change? Is this something that stays or goes? And I think there's a lot of questions there on that. But I also think that most of the things that we're talking about here, look, we're not going to come on here and advocate that you should or shouldn't do anything in terms of, hey, you know, carbon farming, great, everybody should do it. No, we're not saying that. I'm saying this is coming whether you like it or not, whether I like it or not. And it's probably a good time to start taking care of at least tracking some of these things. So that if and when the time comes, in order for you to participate selling to your ethanol plant or to people that you have sold before, because remember, even if you sell to that local county elevator, what if you sell to a co-op? Where's that going?
I think if you're a farmer who has heard of this or has looked into it, maybe you spend a little time diving into it a little bit more than maybe you would have a year or two ago.
Right. And you really have to start paying. It's like if I give you a list of seven things here that they're interested in, and four of them are something that you just do. We've spread manure. I spread manure on all my fields. Well, how much manure do you spread? All of it.
Solid number. I would like to put all of it in that category.
You know, we're over-amplifying here a little bit, but a lot of guys don't track things like that. Or if they do cover crop, it's like, yeah, we cover crop. Okay, well, what'd you plant? Well, does it matter? I think at some point it might matter whether somebody plants cereal rye versus radish.
Well, you know, it's like everything in life, everything is changing.
Right.
Whether it's business, life, personal, whatever you do, everything in this world is changing. Yeah. It's rotating. So you're going to get to a point where, you know, and farming, don't get me wrong, is always changing, but it's going to become like everything else. Things are just going to change at some point.
And one of the things that I will say here as we kind of wrap this part of it up is, look, there's a lot of unknowns. you and I just talking through it right here. We're just spitballing. We're throwing stuff out. There's a lot of unknowns. And I would also tell you, as you explore this, because I think what you suggested is a fantastic idea. You got to start paying attention and dig in, explore a little bit more. Be very careful who you're hooking up with and ask who has your best interests as a farmer in agriculture at heart. Because this is, I liken this era in agriculture with the whole carbon thing to the wild, wild west, the pioneer days. There's really no regulation. There's no rules. Nobody knows really where this is going. Is this something that I'm going to absolutely have to do? Am I going to be mandated to do this in 4 or 5 years? Nobody knows. And there's a lot of money on the table, Chris. There's a lot of money available here. When we're talking federal government tax credits, those are probably huge. If you're talking about having carbon credits that guys trade, that you can trade, dear heavens, the market's not even set on those. There could be tons of money there. So all I'm saying is, do your homework as to who you want to align with to even find out more. And an independent person, rather than somebody that's affiliated with some of these companies like the big grain companies, or even like a company like Climate Corp. You know, they have agendas. Let's be honest. There's agendas there. Make sure that you're very careful who you're aligning with, even when you're trying to figure things out, because it's going to skew what kind of information that you get. You're going to get spun a certain way.
Well, it goes along with everything. You got to do your homework. Mm-hmm. You got to dive in a little bit farther sometime. You can't go with the first conversation. Mm-hmm. I don't think most people do that anymore. But it's just that time that maybe you need to spend looking into it a little mm-hmm. farther, a little deeper, mm-hmm. and get multiple angles on it.
Yeah, and by all means, we're not experts. I'm just bringing to you the article that was put to me, and I know that there are companies, all the big boys are doing work on this right now, the ABCs, the ABCDs that we call them, and even some of the local elevators are trying to align themselves with certain programs. So pay attention. That's something that I think is coming. So good conversation. And if you guys that are listening and gals that are listening have any other things to throw out, want to school us on, want to teach us on, make sure you drop a comment here and let us know, because we will continue to monitor this and bring things to you as we go along. So wrapping this up, podcast up with the last, what did you miss at the coffee shop this week? I got a big one. I sent you this early in the week. Or actually, it was late last week, wasn't it? The picture of the death metal goat.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
oh, yes.
I believe this might have been, I forget who posted this.
It's hilarious, though.
But it's a picture, and I'm holding it up again for Chris to see. This is a lamb that was born with a corpse paint on a pattern. So
it's creepy, though. So cool.
And folks are going, what's corpse paint? Well, all right, so you go to eat it. Mexican restaurants that are have their decorations up from the Day of the Dead. Well, you know, they all have that around the skulls and all that. It's the blacked out.
Yep.
And I look at it too as a one of those really the tough guy football players that, you know, doesn't do with just one area of eye black. He does the entire cheeks. Mm-hmm. So this lamb was born with that around both eyes, and to add to it, He's got a black nose and a black mouth, so he could fit in. This goat could fit in with Kiss of the 70s.
It's heading to the Megadeth concert this week.
And the caption reads, "Lamb looks like he's about to drop the sickest black metal album of the decade." So that's making rounds at the coffee shop, at least at my coffee shop.
Yep. That was good stuff.
This is what I
literally
brought.
Laughed out loud when you sent that.
This is what I brought to my local coffee shop this week.
It got forwarded to multiple people.
Yeah. Another thing, I had an opportunity to sit in this week, second district congressman here in Indiana, Rudy Yockum, is in the middle of a tour throughout Indiana, mm-hmm. make it, build it, move yep. it tour, I think. Sat in on a little farm bill discussion that he was leading up in Elkhart County back a couple of days ago. Interesting story. And this is why I say it's interesting. And this is Ryan Martin's opinion. Please don't skewer me. But, you know, certain ag groups, Farm Bureau and others, remain very very staunchly supportive, and believe beyond a shadow of a doubt that this year the Farm Bill is going to get done. It is the year that it needs to be renewed, so the 2023 Farm Bill gets done. Bless their hearts.
not feeling it, huh?
It's not.
Not feeling the vibe.
It's not happening. And Congressman Yacom was standing up there talking about a few things, and it is clear. They're having meetings. They're having listening sessions, but it is clear beyond a shadow of a doubt. Even something as bipartisan, supposedly bipartisan as the Farm Bill, they are not getting to this year. So I think agriculture needs to just come to grips with the fact that there's going to be an extension. And anytime there's an extension of a Farm Bill, 9 times out of 10, they freeze funding. So if anybody's looking for an increase in funding for this, that, and the other, that probably doesn't happen. And here's the other thing. A freeze in funding is important because what have we been dealing with for the past year and a half now? Inflation. So costs are up for all of these programs, and I think that the Farm Bill is just going to be held and move forward. But I did not get anything out of Congressman Yacom that would tell me, oh, hey, this is imminent. This is going to come. Just the opposite. I don't think anything gets done here. So I might have missed that. And the other thing that we will end with, did anybody come into your 23 plants of corn and take some samples and check out how they were looking this week?
No, they did not.
So the Pro Farmer Crop Tour did not stop by Knapp Lake.
And, absolutely, no,
okay.
Did not.
All right. Well, they didn't stop by my fields either, but I didn't have anything to look at. But the Pro Farmer Crop Tour group was out this week. This was the big week. They're looking at corn and soybeans and trying to develop yield expectations. Ah. And they hit Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Minnesota. So that 7, 8.
But they skipped Blue Bottle Farms.
They did skip. They did skip the farm here, and that's fine with me. Nothing to see here but buckwheat right now.
Buckwheat. I was a little depressed that we didn't go. You didn't go for sunflowers.
Next year the sunflowers.
Oh, I'm very
will be out.
Excited about your sunflowers.
I'm sure you are.
I'm very excited. I may have to be out. I'll be out here a lot. I may just. Just got to scour it a little bit just to make sure things are safe and good.
Watch the sunflowers grow.
Yep, that's exactly why I will be out here.
Exactly. But the Pro Farmer Crop Tour out this week, interesting. They found exactly what they were expecting in Ohio, which was good numbers. Ohio could be sitting on a lot of corn, maybe a little less corn after this week because they had a ton of rain. But South Dakota looks good. But I want to highlight where they were disappointed. They were disappointed in yields in Indiana, disappointed in yields in Iowa, and disappointed in yields in Minnesota. I was expecting disappointment in Iowa and Indiana. I was not expecting to have Minnesota lumped into that block. So interesting here what that says about supply. Are the Pro Farmer Crop Tours right or wrong? Sometimes yes.
And why the difference in Ohio and the others?
Well, Ohio had some pretty decent weather and maybe not so much good weather, especially early on out west. The other thing that I want to kind of talk about, and we're going to run out of time. We can't chat too much about it today, but I think it's a topic for another podcast. The methodology of this crop tour. Did you know, Mr. Underwood, that in the state of Indiana, if you do not have an affiliation and some purpose for being there with regard to the crop that it is a production on the field that you're looking at, you are not allowed. It's a misdemeanor for you to be in that field and doing things with the crop that is not yours.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea existed. So you just can't walk into a random field.
That's what I'm saying.
And pick corn.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh.
And that's what the Pro Farmer Crop Tour has done for a good number of years. To my knowledge, they don't have permission for where they go.
They just stop?
They just stop and go in. Now, they have a predetermined route.
Right.
But it's interesting. And there was a lot of new talk about that on the old, I'm old school, I guess I'm still calling it Twitter, but on the old X past week about the methodology for getting these yields. So we'll have to dive into that sometime because I'm not sure how I'd feel about somebody just stopping by and traipsing through my fields, sunflowers and whatnot. Interesting, though, that some states, actually it's in state code in Indiana that it is a misdemeanor.
Honestly, it probably should be when you factor in the amount of people that could walk into a field grab sweet corn, whatever they wanted to.
Well, and on top of that, we've been fighting in agriculture for forever. You know, you walk out in the middle of a large cornfield, what do you find in the middle? four pot plants that were not planted by the farmer.
That is so, are you sure?
And that is another episode.
Has that happened here at all?
That's another episode here for the
sunflower season just got more interesting, if that's the case.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, so those are some of the things you probably missed at the coffee shop this week. I know there was a lot of talk about Pro Farmer, and I think in the weeks to come, especially if we dry down, the Pro Farmer tours, a lot of times their numbers that they put out for their expected production, and it's the asterisk. If everything is good from here forward, so if weather's perfect and if we get rain, and we're running into a big if right now, whether that is going to happen. So that's all I got for today. You got anything you brought to the table today?
I got nothing today.
Nothing
I
today?
I got nothing today at all.
Except your excitement for sunflowers.
I am ready for sunflowers next year. When do those go in, by the way, next year?
Well, here on our farm, we are generally late planting because of our soil type, so it'll probably be June.
So June, so we're looking at July
sometime,
for
yes.
pictures.
Yes, sometimes,
okay.
Yeah.
Very excited about the photography season here at the Sunflower Farm.
I'm sure you are. I'm sure you are.
And the number of peacocks that will be joining the Sunflower Farm.
There will not be any
very
of those.
Depressing.
None, very, no peacocks.
I'm telling you, you're missing the boat on the peacock farm.
There is no boat to miss. That boat is not even sailing from this area.
We can bring the boat by.
Nope, the boat is not
a great boat.
Not even on a trailer.
Be a very good boat.
All right, folks. Thanks for joining us for this round of the Little Red Barn podcast. We'll be back at you in 1 week. Like, subscribe, put comments on. We want to hear what you think, and we want to deal with those live in person next time. So make sure that you click all of those buttons. Have a great week. We'll be back next week to talk the same here on the Little Red Barn.